Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. In 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Edwards, and alongside me today, folks, we've got the global head of R&D at Garden Life, Garden of Life, and Vital Proteins, now under the umbrella of Nestle Health Science. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Jeff Brahms. Jeff, my friend, thanks for coming on the program today.
Thanks so much. And I really appreciate the time with you, Kevin.
Of course. Well, that was certainly a mouthful of a title there. Now kind of going into that next transition of your life here. And I earned it today. So I want to go right into that kind of title today. And congratulations on the partnership now with Nestle, of course, acquiring the business. And I want to kind of get into this journey. But before we do, a little bit more about the Garden of Life.
Sure.
A little bit more about your experience there. How did you arrive at Garden of Life, and maybe what drove you to this organization?
Great question. I'll tell you that, as I often will tell the people I mentor, the best stories in life are never a straight line. You know, they're the zigzags and the detours that you never expected. And Garden of Life was exactly that type of zigzag for me. I actually had been the vice president and assistant general counsel for Arby's, the restaurant company, for many years before that. I was in charge of franchising and distribution and FDA and FTC and advertising, but also I had a business role that I assisted with some of the supply chain development, particularly around grass-fed beef. This is in the days when we all had concerns about mad cow disease, and it was very difficult to have beef transported. So I had some roles there opening up a safe supply chain. And then I also was leading in efforts for international expansion and retraction. That time we were primarily retracting, but my responsibilities were both. So I'd been at Arby's for quite a long time, and the company, as happens with successful companies, the company had merged and moved, and my wife and I, we had our first son, and we moved when our first son was 1 year old from where our home is in Florida to Atlanta. And during the time we were in Atlanta, we got pregnant with our second son. And then Arby's started its journey to purchase Wendy's. So it was like the minnow swallowing the whale. And I spent the first 6 weeks of my second son's life never once seeing him awake. So one day I went into my boss's office. It was a Friday. It was about 8 o'clock at night. And I was like, look, I'll give you 4 months to figure out my replacement. I did exactly what everybody tells you not to do, quitting a job before you have a job. And I went home and I was sitting at the dinner table telling my wife that I had just, you know, resigned. And I was the sole provider for our home. And I knew the founder of Garden of Life, and he was in a bit of a spot, and he called me, and an hour later, after giving me advice, he'd offered me a job, and I agreed to go back to Florida where I was from, and that's how I ended up here.
Wow. I love stories like that, and really, you know, truly like following your heart. I mean, have you always kind of had a moral compass like that, a heart like that? Tell me a little bit more about your decision-making process in that.
Sure. You know, this podcast is too short to talk about all of the mistakes and stumbles I've had along my career. And, you know, because your career is really an outgrowth of your own personal development. When I went to law school, I really went to law school because the economy had soured and I had gotten a job in investment banking as a trainee. My mom, she was a single parent, had gotten breast cancer, and the day before a double mastectomy had fallen off the ladder at her job, hanging a Christmas banner, and broken both of her feet. So there was nobody to help her to go through the recovery. She recovered fine, and the story was a good story, but I deferred going into the investment banking program. By the time I went to accept, the economy had soured, and they closed down the program. So not having any job, I ended up deciding to go to law school, which I think a lot of people decide when they're not happy in their career, when they don't see a fruitful way of making money, they say, okay, let's go for more school. And, you know, I think I knew that the moment I drove up to the University of Florida to start a law school, I think I knew this wasn't really what I was put on this earth for. I knew it. But, you know, I didn't really know what to do about it. And that's part of my evolution, is learning to listen to that voice inside of myself and develop the confidence to follow it. So, you know, at that point, I didn't have that confidence. So I went to law school. From law school, I ended up practicing law. And then I left the practice of law, realizing that I did not enjoy it, and went out on the mission field. I have Christian background, a Christian and Jewish family upbringing, and I was always impressed with this group. They operate what are called the Mercy Ships, which are these floating tanker hospitals that go all around the world bringing medical relief where it's otherwise inaccessible. And they get doctors and nurses to give them 6 months at a time of service. And I'd met the guy who led the organization. He was living in Amsterdam, and I met him. And one night, you know, after most of a bottle of wine and talking about the world and the needs in the world, I told him, I said, you need a lawyer. You know, you need a lawyer to go and open the doors to get medical relief supplies released, because most of the world is tribal in nature, and it's a negotiation to release the relief supplies to the people who need it. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anybody to do that. So the relief supplies, we're going to 40-foot containers of necessary drugs and provisions, were sitting at dock for months at a time. So I said, I'll do that. I'll go around the world and I'll help you get relief supplies to people. So, you know, one thing leads to another, Kevin, and that was how I started to get international experience and find a way to take that law degree and use it to follow more of what I felt I was meant for.
That's very special and beautiful. And, you know, I think for anyone listening out there, I think it's really important that we talk about these things, right? We talk about purpose, we talk about service and kind of what fills your cup. If you were to kind of like share, like in maybe you've spent time doing this as well, and maybe you've crafted this statement, like your purpose statement, is it helping to serve others? Is it fulfilling, you know, a need that someone else has? Like, what really revs like your engine and really makes your heart sing?
You know, it's a great question, and it's a very personal question, and I can't believe on a podcast I'm going to be this transparent with you, but I will tell you that I remember the day when I was a senior in college and I was sitting out in a golf course at midnight after a date. The date wasn't so great. So I was by myself. I was sitting out in the golf course looking up at this beautiful sky, and I realized my goal, what I want to do with my life, is I want to change the world. I didn't know what that meant, but I knew that I didn't want the people that I interacted with, the people I could influence, the people who would have interaction with me, I didn't want their lives not to be enriched by the fact that I had somehow interacted with them. I wanted the world to be a little step better. Now, I didn't know what shape that would take or what that meant, you know, and that's a very personal journey that I think nobody can take for another person. But I know that's what lights my fire. You know, if I can find ways to use business as a force of good, if I can find ways to use my own mistakes as a open door to help others not repeat them, you know, that idea that somebody would stand on your shoulders and not walk in your ruts, you know, whatever it is, that lights my fire.
And certainly consistent throughout, you know, the career changes, like in your experience so far. So let's maybe bring the audience back to the shift from Arby's now to Garden of Life. You've had the conversation with the founder. You now accept this new position. Tell us a little bit more about the impact this organization is having and your early experience there.
Yeah. So when I agreed to come to the company, it was in a tough moment. The company was the founder was a young guy. He, like a lot of people in the health industry, he founded the company based on his own personal experience and his own health journey. So he was talking very openly about things he believed people could do with nutrition. And we have a highly regulated system, even though people like to say it's not. So you get in trouble when you talk about things like cancer and Crohn's disease and other disease states. And he had gotten in trouble. The FDA and the FTC had come and had clamped down on him, and the business was contracting. And when I came, it was a turnaround. And the goal was to either turn it around or sell it for parts. So we obviously did turn it around, and we became a very successful business. We're the brand that's the largest brand that nobody knows. We're the number one brand on Amazon. We are by far the number one brand in the healthy food specialty stores. So you walk into a Whole Foods or a vitamin shop, or, you know, even if you go into Walmart and Target, we're the number one probiotic brand. But we're not what people think of a lot of times, because we're a specialist in what we call whole food, organic, non-GMO nutrition. And that was the reinvention point. And, you know, we all reach these. The company was founded based on the founder's personal journey. Well, the founder sold the company in 2009. And when I joined the company, just to take it back a moment, when I joined the company, as often is the case when you're in a small organization, you're not siloed. You know, people can expand their opportunities to the extent of their own willingness to work and the level of their own ability to make themselves competent. Well, I knew from law school, I knew I could teach. I could teach myself. I could learn anything if I applied myself. So every time we were contracting, we let somebody go. We're letting the head of operations go. Well, I can do that. We're letting the head formulator go. I can do that. You know, and I kept volunteering to put more and more on my plate, figuring that at some point I would reach the limits of my own abilities, but I was going to keep adding to my scope until that point was reached. And that was transformative for me, because it opened up an avenue that was perfect for me. Creating products, creating supply chains, perfect for me. But it also was transformative for the company. That we started to turn around, the founder sold the company, and that gave me an opportunity to really bring my passion for supply chains and building products in a different way into the company. I had a vision for organic, non-GMO nutrition. That vision wasn't really existing in the marketplace at the time. So that's how I spent my energy, was going and creating products, which first you had to create raw material supply chains to build the products.
And bring me into some like a window into how you think about building and manufacturing a successful product that fills a need of a customer. Like, how do you, where do you start? Have you kind of along the way adopted some tips, techniques, lenses you kind of see things through to, I mean, the scale that you brought this to is insane. So I'm just trying to like understand, how do you think about the customer and the products that you make?
100%. So I think of three different buckets. Mm-hmm. So bucket number one, what you just said, the end user. The end user is the key customer, because without them, there is no reason for being. So you can't create things for people that you don't know. And the issue that we see in larger companies, and we see in many CPG, you know, consumer packaged good brands, is they hire marketers to go out and interview people to tell them what people want. It's layer upon layer upon layer separating you from the end user. And by the time you get that data, all that data is in the rearview mirror. It's not what somebody wants that's the unmet need. It's what somebody wants that they're already getting. And you're trying to think of a way to replicate what somebody else has done and give your own twist to it. That's not, to me, that bucket with the customer. To me, that bucket with the customer is, what's the unmet need? What do they need to enrich their life and make their life better? And what would be so attractive to them that they would add it to their basket? Not replace one that they're buying from X company with mine, but they would actually add to their basket. That idea is pivotal because of your second customer. So when you're a CPG company, you sell a product that goes to an end consumer, but you first have to sell that product to a retailer. And you have to enrich the retailer. You have to sell a product that adds to their profitability and actually increases the overall purchase size of the basket. So creating products, understanding the unmet need, helps the retailer to grow their business. And fundamentally, my goal is, as I told you, to always add value, to leave somebody better. So the way you leave your retail partner better is by enhancing their overall sale and making them more profitable. But then there's that third customer. And this is the one that most product developers end with. They don't start with. They start with an idea of, this is the need I'm going to meet. Then they go to, this is the place I'm going to sell it. And the last people they start with is, who's going to make the things that go in it? And I'm always opposite of that. To me, we create these cycles of good. We have the potential to create these cycles of good that start with the very first person to touch the very first part of whatever we're making. In my case, it's a nutrition product. So in my case, it's the farmer in a field who's sowing seed. And that actually, Kevin, is how I got to the proposition of organic and non-GMO to begin with. You know, it wasn't my own scientific point of view on whether or not genetic materials are good for you or bad for you. I never thought that was an even relevant conversation. It was that corporate agriculture and the use and reliance of genetically modified seeds and the chemicals used to fertilize them, that is a corporate enterprise for which people are not uplifted. In fact, it has some of the lowest pay. It has some of the lowest use of actual human capital as opposed to machinery. And it's an aging, it's a very gray environment, because there's so little opportunity for growth and for improvement in economy or education levels. But when you look at organic systems, it's completely the opposite. It's some of the youngest farmers, the highest educated farmers, and the cost of living and standard of living is growing. Everywhere in the world, this is the case. So that's how I arrived at that proposition. And I started first with, what can I make as a starting raw material? from that raw material, what can I meet from a consumer's point of view that's an unmet need? And then my last focus is, how do I enrich the retailer and make them happier that they have my product on shelf as opposed to someone else's?
That's interesting. You know, okay. So and I want to ask a couple clarifying questions here, because when you're working with these supply chains, and these are potential, you know, these are co-ops, these are, you know, organic farms, are you just asking them, hey, like, what are you growing? Like, what is out there? I'm just one, like, standard question. Like, what are you asking them?
Yeah. So it depends. You surf, you're young, but you probably get sore muscles from time to time. Instead of taking a Tylenol or an Advil, have you ever taken turmeric or heard of turmeric?
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing how many people at all age levels use turmeric for joints and, you know, their health. So when I was bringing turmeric to the market, there was already turmeric in the market. It took me a while to bring turmeric in the market because I had this unmet need. So I obsess on where things come from and how they're made. That old show, How It's Made.
Right.
I've got four kids. They all grew up watching it. So, you know, most turmeric is grown with a tremendous amount of chemical spray in India, where there's a very low standard of living out on those fields. And then it's extracted using either ethanol or other petroleum byproducts. So you're creating a product that's meant for good, but you're doing no good in the creation process. So for me, the first mission was to work with partners who knew organic farming in India, where they already had expertise. How do you create a water-based extraction completely clean? How do you build organic farmland where we're not using in those chemicals? And then how do we bring in it this portion of an NGO type thinking, where we use a portion of the capital from the purchase of all of this to build schools? And by the way, why don't we ever think about the idea of paying the parents to send their kid to school an equal or better wage than what the kids would learn if they, what the kids would earn if they're out in the fields working alongside the parent, which is the majority of the way that the economy works there. So it was establishing all of that infrastructure, and no one can do it, especially if some little company in Florida. Nobody can do all that by themselves. And that's what relationship is. I spent really the better part of my last 20 years going out and making relationships with the people who could do it and persuading them, oftentimes just with the power of vision, persuading them, we can do this together. We can have a shared journey together, and your company will profit and my company will profit. We'll make enough money for all of us. Will you commit?
And that's
industry to industry.
And that's really key, is selling them, you know, encouraging them and, you know, influencing them to see the vision within the vision and the greater vision within the vision. And that takes, you know, a lot of communication, a lot of talent, a lot of yeses, a lot of nos. Mm-hmm. I want to get there. I want to come back real quick to the earlier where you kind of start this. So if I'm hearing you right, based on that last story, for an example, if I want to kind of go out and create turmeric, okay, I see turmeric here. It's not really being used to its potential. Then I go to the suppliers and say, okay, we're going to, you know, basically innovate where there's constraints here. We're going to talk to suppliers. We're going to make sure that we can reinvest into the communities to create sustainability in those local communities, pay the workers well, which then goes back to the yields of the crops. And then you take it to the unmet need of the retailer first, which is you need to make sure that they have, you know, high enough margin to fill the basket. And then it reaches the end consumer who ends up purchasing the product. Am I tracking you on terms of how you think about innovation in the supply chain?
You are.
Okay.
Hey. Yeah. Sorry, you want to ask another question?
Continue.
One little thing. Just sort of a fun portion. So I told you that it all has to start for me. It all has to start at the very beginning. But you don't have time to do things in a linear fashion. None of us do, Kevin. I know you don't with everything you do. So, you know, you're working in parallel streams always. So at the time that I'm trying to build a turmeric supply chain, I'm also trying to understand what's the unmet need for the consumer. Well, maybe it's a joint health. Maybe the consumer needs a new option in joint health, or maybe the consumer needs a new whatever it is. But how do I develop that understanding? So for me, I told you that we're the number one seller on Amazon, but we're also the number one seller in specialty retail. And I have a Whole Foods that is 10 minutes from my office and 5 minutes from my house. And I have a vitamin shop that's 5 minutes one direction, another one that's 5 minutes another direction. So what I've done since I started my career, before I had all these additional responsibilities, and I started just as the lawyer for Garden of Life in the turnaround, I would take my lunch hour and I just go into the Whole Foods shelf and I just take the full hour. I observe who's coming in. What are they buying? Why are they buying it? Why aren't they buying something else? And I got to where I started to get a little bit more bold and talk to them. Hey, what is it about that product? And why didn't you take that one? And what are you looking for? And then I began to develop the relationship with the people who work the floor. And then in order to earn the right to be there day after day interrupting their business, I started helping stock the shelves. I figured if I'm creating usefulness for them, they will in return create usefulness for me and share the experience, the platform, the opportunity, the customer base, everything I wanted them to share. It got to where when they would have new concepts that Whole Foods would be testing in the region, before they ever put it on shelf, they'd call me and say, hey, Jeff, come over and look at this. We want to see what you think. And I would get a view to what my competitors would be putting on shelf in test before it was ever there. Because I made myself useful and helpful in an effort really driven to get to know the end consumer the way they think. How can you ever find the unmet need if you don't really know the people that you're trying to meet the needs of? So it's all a parallel. You got to work on these things at the same time.
And what great experience too, and to think about, you know, how you came in as the lawyer for the organization to, you know, just having the drive to fulfill all the needs of the business, you know, and really the secret, and there really isn't a secret, it's just putting in the work, you know, it's really asking the right questions, being there, talking to your customers, helping out all aspects and steps of the supply chain. And I like how you phrased that too. How did the food get here? And that's really what's driving, I think, a lot of this innovation is everything's just so opaque. You don't really know where it comes from. You don't really know if it's healthy for you. And there's certifications like B Corp and, you know, Fair Trade and others that are really helping with that process to helping that consumer understand what they're buying. Is it going to give them cancer? Right. Mm-hmm. And I like your example of turmeric. I mean, we give our pets turmeric and yeah, joint supplements, right? And it's all about, you know, do you invest now or do you pay the doctor later? My question in this thing is, I think a lot of this is about risk taking and a lot of this thing is about leadership and what costs that also can come, like what costs come with that, right? And so my question for you, Jeff, is like, did you ever run into an instance where maybe you got it wrong? You know, maybe you got it wrong one time and maybe those costs, that risk that you took, it really impacted the company. It could have impacted the employees, could have impacted the shareholders. Yeah. Is there a time that kind of sticks out to you when that happened and how you went about it?
The problem is that there are so many times it's selecting the ones to tell you about, you know. So at your age, I don't know if you were ever even aware of the ketogenic diet movement. It was pretty popular just a few years ago.
I'm aware. Yes.
Yeah. So you ever purchase butter powder?
No.
Yet most people haven't. Have you ever bought vanilla or chocolate salmon protein?
No.
Yeah, I can tell you that You're not alone, which is why I epically flamed out on both product launches.
Right. Okay. Yes, there you
So,
go.
but here's the thing is that number one, in anybody else's organization, you have to earn the right to take the risk, and you have to earn the right to fail. And you do that by showing up, by working hard, by building trust, by demonstrating value, and by building enough successes that you can do a butter powder or a salmon protein, and you've earned that. But number two, you have to understand and passionately persuade those above you, beside you, and below you, because everybody in the entire chain is impacted when a failure occurs. We all are impacted. You have to persuade them all that failure is forward movement. We're failing forward, we're not failing backwards. So, the only way failure is forward movement is when you build on it. Your failure being the step to the next success is not a cliche. It's an activity and it's hard work. So, I'll give you those two examples. With butter powder, it took me 6 years to bring whey protein to the market, plenty of whey protein to the market. None had ever been non-GMO project verified. Reason why? Because you couldn't validate that the palm, most people don't know that palm is a primary feed source, even on grass-fed cows. Well, we don't like palm oil because of deforestation, what happens to the gorillas. Palm is harvested the exact same way. They just don't press the oil out of the kernels. So it's all that effort to build a supply chain that was palm-free and fully traceable on its ingredients and validated grass-fed. Once we got that with whey protein, then I thought, okay, can we do the same thing and replicate it in another place outside of Ireland? Can we do it in New Zealand? And New Zealand makes amazing butter. So I had this vision. I couldn't sell butter because I don't sell a cold supply chain, short expiration,
Right.
but I could turn it into a powder, and maybe people who have ketogenic diets would buy it. And if I can create more income for the people who built the supply chain for me, I can use them to build new supply chains. Sadly, it didn't work. But it led us to other products. With salmon, it's very similar. It's a very similar story. It was all about an off-the-grid, unique supplier who is actually farming salmon in the deep ocean fjords, completely off the grid. I mean, even his boats are hydroelectric powered. He's providing more energy to the planet than he's taking from the planet. And his salmon, by the way, is amazing. And I thought, okay, maybe this could be something big, but nobody ever really wanted vanilla salmon. So,
Right.
you gotta take those failures to build into what do they want, and how do I do it better the next time?
Right. Yeah, and the reason I ask is, this conscious leadership movement it comes from failure, right? It comes from inefficiencies in the capital markets. And I'm always just fascinated by, what do we prioritize in a stakeholder capitalistic society? It seems like you really prioritize the suppliers. You hold them to a very, very high standard. You start with them. But at the end of the day, you got to serve stakeholders that include customers, your employees, and shareholders. How do you think about, like, if you were to prioritize, a dollar bill in the company, I mean, how did you look at it when you were at Garden of Life? Did you prioritize maybe one over the other?
So the journey's been interesting because, I told you the founder sold early on. He sold in 2009. So he sold to a group that was owned by a pension fund in Quebec. Very patient capital. Pension funds are very patient capital. And that grew in value. And then they decided, because it was really a flurry of activity in my industry, to sell to a private equity. So the private equity, not so patient capital.
Right.
wanted the exit within 3 to 4 years total at huge private equity, and then sold again to Nestle, who's what they call a synergy buyer, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been working throughout multiple systems. Here's what I saw at every step along the way. No matter whether we had patient capital, synergy, big company ownership, or private equity, everyone bought into the vision because the vision was so baked into every communication that it's a false choice to say that you have to choose one or the other, building value and equity for the stakeholder or building value and equity for the owner. You know, these are false choices. They're straw men. When something continues to grow and appreciate in value, it has the ability, if you navigate and you govern it well, has the ability to, it's like a rising ocean. It will lift all boats. And there's enough for everyone. There's enough for all of us to be very successful. There isn't a shortage of customers. There isn't a shortage of business. There isn't a shortage of good to do. It's this abundance mentality that you bake into every communication at every level. And thank God, people believed it. And then they rode along the journey with us enough to experience it. Everybody who owned us made lots of money. Nestle's made lots of money owning Garden of Life. They have tried to unlock what we do so that they can do more of it. You know, and all of Nestle Health is now B Corp. Vital Proteins that I'm running global, it's B Corp. You know, Orgain. I mean, it's they Nespresso. I mean, these. So one little choice at a little company can have more power than we recognize if we stay dogmatically, passionately committed to our message. It's when you compromise your message because you think your owners need to hear it this way and you think your other stakeholders need to hear it that way. It's when you compromise your message that you start treading on that slippery slope.
Certainly leadership too, right? I mean, having that consistent message, you're not compromising, going against, staying bold, staying courageous is having the integrity built throughout the entire supply chain. I mean, it's really powerful and profound, and it really adds a lot of brand equity and kind of solidifies what the brand is all about. What do you think a brand is? I mean, you've probably put some time and thinking into how your brand should be, what it's not. What do you think a brand is at the end of the day?
Well, I can say what Garden of Life is. Garden of Life is a friend that you want to be like. You know, that's what the brand is to people. You know, there is something that it isn't preachy. It is just slightly aspirational because it's a functional product. It's meant, you know, when you sell a probiotic to help people have bowel movements, this is a functional product, right? But there's something very aspirational that's there at the same time. So it's like that friend, you know, those friends, you have them that they just do something a little better than you do and you admire and you want to be like them in that way. There's something about them that attracts you because they just do it a little better. That's what this brand is. Now, there's other brands that are more like that, you know, that other friend or that nerd in school, or you can describe them as some other, you know, person that you know. But I do think that brands that really develop as a brand that people relate to, brands are very much like people. We think of them in the same way.
Mm. You know? I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, humanizing the brand that way. And Jeff, I just want to say I appreciate you kind of sharing your journey with us today. You know, it's one of passion, purpose, drive, you know, and longevity. And I'm just out of curiosity, Jeff, like what's next for you?
It's a great question. My wife has been asking me the same thing. You know, they've known by Nestle for a little over 5 years, and it's been an amazing experience. And they've unlocked this opportunity for me to take what I do here in the U.S. and do it on a global level. So that's exciting me right now, that idea. But I'm also asking myself, you know, what do I want this next decade, which I think will be my most productive ever? I know more, I've done more, I'm faster. What do I really want this next decade to look like? And I'm not sure of the answer yet.
Well, I'm wishing you well. And when you discover it at that time and fall upon another epic decade, Jeff, it's been a pleasure having you on the program today. In all of this, we talked a lot today about stakeholder advocacy, supply chains, brand, key messaging, vision, passion, inspiration, like all of the great things one would talk about on a podcast. But in all of this, Jeff, what is your definition of a real leader?
I think that word real is key to the definition. You have as a leader a certain amount of projection, but you can only project from what's within, not what you've borrowed from someone else. So there are lots of ways to lead. I lead through passion and vision. Others lead through consistency. Others lead through financial discipline. But you have to be willing to step out of your comfort zone and project what's on the inside out. Let people identify with you. Let people see the foibles. Let them hear the mistakes. And let them hear the recovery, how you got back up and kept getting back up along the way. That, to me, is that real leadership.
Well said. For Jeff Brahms, I'm Kevin Edwards, asking you to go out there, let people in, and always keep it real. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Hey, Real Leaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to realleaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free, where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.